She even took to waiting for me in the morning with Jeremy so that I could carry her books. When friends of hers walked with us, she bragged about her little colored friend and almost hugged herself with pleasure when I called her Ms. Lillian Jean. When we were alone, she confided her secrets to me, the boy she had passionately loved for the past year, and the things she had done to attract his attention, with no success, I might add. The secrets of the girl she couldn't stand as well as those she could, and even a tidbit or two about her elder brother's romantic adventures. All I had to do to prime the gossip pump was smile nicely and whisper a Ms. Lillian Jean every now and then. I almost hated to see the source dry up. At the end of examination day, I shot out of Miss Crocker's class and hurried into the yard. I was eager to get to the crossroads to meet Lillian Jean. I had promised myself to first take care of the examinations and then... "Little man? Claude? Christopher John, come on, y'all," I cried. "There's Stacy." The four of us dashed across the yard, trailing Stacy and TJ to the road. When we caught up with them, it was obvious that the jovial mask TJ always wore had been stripped away. "She did it on purpose," TJ accused, a nasty scowl twisting his face.
"Man, you was cheating," Stacy pointed out. "What you expect her to do?"
"She could have given me a break. Weren't nothing but a couple bits of old paper. Didn't need 'em nohow."
"Well, what'd you have them for?"
"Oh, man, leave me be. All y'all Logans think y'all so doggone much with y'all's new coats and books and shiny new packets."
He swirled around, glaring down at Christopher John, little man, and me.
"I'm sick of all y'all. Your mama and your papa, too."
Then he turned and fled angrily up the road.
"TJ, hey, man, where you going?"
Stacy yelled after him. TJ didn't answer. The road swelled into a small hill, and he disappeared on the other side of it. When we reached the crossroads and saw no sign of him on the southern road leading home, Stacy asked Claude, "Where he go?" Claude looked shamefaced and rubbed one badly worn shoe against the other.
"Down to that old store, I reckon."
Stacy sighed.
"Come on, then. We'd better get on home. He'll be all right by tomorrow."
"Y'all go on," I said. "I gotta wait for Lillian Jean."
"Cassie,
I'll catch up with y'all," I said, before Stacy could lecture me.
"Here, take my books, will you?"
He looked at me as if he should say something else, but deciding not to, he pushed the younger boys on and followed them. When Lillian Jean appeared, I sighed thankfully that only Jeremy was with her. It could be today for sure. Jeremy, who seemed to be as disappointed in me as little man, hurried on to catch Stacy. That was fine, too. I knew he would. I took Lillian Jean's books, and as we sauntered down the road, I only half listened to her. I was sweeping the road, looking for the deep wooded trail I had selected earlier in the week. When I saw it, I interrupted Lillian Jean apologetically.
"Excuse me, Miss Lillian Jean, but I got a real nice surprise for you. Found it just the other day down in the woods."
"For me?" questioned Lillian Jean.
"Oh, you is a sweet thing, Cassie. Will you say it is? Come on, I'll show you."
I stepped into the dry gully and scrambled onto the bank. Lillian Jean hung back.
"It's all right," I assured her. "It ain't far. You just gotta see it, Miss Lillian Jean."
That did it. Grinning like a Cheshire cat, she crossed the gully and hopped onto the bank. Following me up the overgrown trail into the deep forest, she asked,
"You sure this is the way, little Cassie?"
"Just a bit further. Up ahead there. Ah, here it is."
We entered a small, dark clearing with hanging forest vines totally hidden from the road.
"Well, where's the surprise?"
"Right here," I said, smashing Lillian Jean's books on the ground.
"Why, what you do that for?"
Lillian Jean asked, more startled than angry. "I got tired of carrying 'em," I said.
"This what you brought me all the way down here for?
Well, you just best get untied and pick him up again.
Then, expecting that her will would be done with no more than that from her, she turned to leave the glade.
Make me, I said quietly.
What?
The shock on her face was almost comical.
Said, make me.
Her face paled. Then, red with anger, she stepped daintily across the clearing and struck me hard across the face. For the record, she had hit me first. I didn't plan on her hitting me again. I flailed into her, tackling her with such force that we both fell. After the first shock of my actually laying hands on her, she fought as best she could, but she was no match for me. I was calm and knew just where to strike. I punched her in the stomach and buttocks and twisted her hair, but not once did I touch her face. She, expending her energy in angry, nasty name-calling, clawed at mine, managing to scratch twice. She tried to pull my hair, but couldn't, for I had purposely asked Big Ma to braid it into flat braids against my head. When I had pinned Lillian Jean securely beneath me, I yanked unmercifully on her long, loose hair and demanded an apology for all the names she had called me and for the incident in Strawberry. At first, she tried to be cute.
Ain't gonna apologize to no nigger, she sassed.
You wanna be bald, girl?
And she apologized. For herself, and for her father, for her brothers, and her mother, for Strawberry, and Mississippi, and by the time I finished jerking at her head, I think she would have apologized for the world being round had I demanded it. But when I let her go, and she had sped safely to the other side of the clearing with the trail in front of her, she threatened to tell her father.
You do that, Lillian Jean. You just do that. And I'm going to make sure all your fancy friends know how you keeps a secret. Bet you won't be learning no more secrets after that.
Cassie, you wouldn't do that. Not after I trusted you.
You mutter one word of this to anybody, Lillian Jean, I said, attempting to narrow my eyes like Papa's. Just one person, and everybody at Jefferson Davis is going to know who you crazy about and all your other business. And you know I know. Besides, if anybody ever did find out about this fight, you'd be laughed clear up to Jackson. You here going on 13, getting beat up by a 9-year-old.
I was starting up the trail, feeling good about myself, when Lillian Jean asked, bewildered,
But, Cassie, why? You were such a nice little girl.
I stared at her, astonished. Then I turned and left the forest, not wanting to believe that Lillian Jean didn't even realize it had all been just a game.
Cassie Logan?
Yes'm, Miss Crocker?
That's the third time I've caught you daydreaming this morning. Just because you managed to come in first on the examinations last week doesn't mean a thing this week. We're in a new quarter, and everyone's slate is clean. You'll make no A's by daydreaming. You understand that?
Yes'm, I said,
not bothering to add that she repeated herself so much that all a body had to do was listen to the first few minutes of her lesson to be free to daydream to her heart's content.
I think you'd just better sit in the back, where you're not so comfortable, she said. Then maybe you'll pay more attention.
But,
Miss Crocker raised her hand, indicating that she didn't want to hear another word, and banished me to the very last row in front of the window. I slid onto the cold seat after its former occupant had eagerly left it for my warm quarters by the stove. As soon as Miss Crocker turned away, I mumbled a few indignant phrases, then hugged my Christmas sweater around me. I tried to pay attention to Miss Crocker, but the cold creeping under the windowsill made it impossible. Unable to bear the draft, I decided to line the sill with paper from my notebook. I ripped out the paper, then turned to the window. As I did, a man passed under it and disappeared. The man was Caleb Wallace. I raised my hand.
Ms. Crocker? May I be excused, please, ma'am?
As soon as I had escaped Miss Crocker, I dashed to the front of the building. Caleb Wallace was standing in front of the seventh grade class building talking to Mr. Welliver and two white men whom I couldn't make out from where I stood. When the men entered the building, I turned and sped to the rear and carefully climbed onto the wood pile stacked behind it. I peeked cautiously through a broken window into Mama's classroom. The men were just entering, Caleb Wallace first, followed by a man I didn't know, and Mr. Harlan Granger. Mama seemed startled to see the men, but when Mr. Granger said,
"Been hearing about your teaching, Mary. So as members of the school board, we thought we'd come by and learn something."
She merely nodded and went on with her lesson. Mr. Welliver left the room, returning shortly with three folding chairs for the visitors. He himself remained standing. Mama was in the middle of history, and I knew that was bad. I could tell Stacy knew it, too. He sat tense near the back of the room, his lips very tight, his eyes on the men. But Mama did not flinch. She always started her history class the first thing in the morning when the students were most alert, and I knew that the hour wasn't yet up. To make matters worse, her lesson for the day was slavery. She spoke on the cruelty of it, of the rich economic cycle it generated as slaves produced the raw products for the factories of the North and Europe, how the country profited and grew from the free labor of a people still not free. Before she had finished, Mr. Granger picked up a student's book, flipped it open to the pasted-over front cover, and pursed his lips.
"Thought these books belonged to the county," he said, interrupting her.
Mama glanced over at him, but didn't reply. Mr. Granger turned the pages, stopped, and read something.
"I don't see all them things you're teaching in here."
"That's because they're not in there," Mama said.
"Well, if it ain't in here, then you got no right teaching it. This book's approved by the Board of Education, and you're expected to teach what's in it."
"I can't do that."
"And why not?"
Mama, her back straight and her eyes fixed on the men, answered, "Because all that's in that book isn't true." Mr. Granger stood. He laid the book back on the student's desk and headed for the door. The other board member and Caleb Wallace followed. At the door, Mr. Granger stopped and pointed at Mama.
"You must be some kind of smart, Mary, to know more than the fellow who wrote that book. Smarter than the school board, too, I reckon."
Mama remained silent, and Mr. Welliver gave her no support.
"In fact," Mr. Granger continued, putting on his hat, "you so smart, I expect you'd best just forget about teaching altogether. Then that way you'll have plenty of time to write your own book."
With that, he turned his back on her, glanced at Mr. Welliver to make sure his meaning was clear, and left with the others behind him. We waited for Mama after school was out. Stacy had sent TJ and Claude on, and the four of us, silent and patient, were sitting on the steps when Mama emerged. She smiled down at us, seemingly not surprised that we were there. I looked up at her, but I couldn't speak. I had never really thought much about Mama's teaching before. That was just a part of her being Mama. But now that she could not teach, I felt resentful and angry, and I hated Mr. Granger. "Y'all know?" she asked. We nodded as she slowly descended the stairs. Stacy took one handle of her heavy black satchel, and I took the other. Christopher John and Little Man each took one of her hands, and we started across the lawn.
Mama, said Christopher John when we reached the road, "can't you ever teach no more?"
Mama didn't answer immediately. When she did, her voice was muffled.
"Somewhere else, maybe, but not here. At least not for a while."
"But how's come, Mama?" demanded Little Man. "How's come?"
Mama bit into her lower lip and gazed at the road.
"Because, baby," she said finally, "I taught things some folks just didn't want to hear."
When we reached home, Papa and Mr. Morrison were both in the kitchen with Big Ma drinking coffee. As we entered, Papa searched our faces. His eyes settled on Mama. The pain was in her face.
"What's wrong?" he asked.
Mama sat down beside him. She pushed back a strand of hair that had worked its way free of the chignon, but it fell back into her face again, and she left it there. I got fired. Big Ma put down her cup, weakly, without a word. Papa reached out and touched Mama. She said, Harlan Granger came to the school with Caleb Wallace and one of the school board members. Somebody had told them about those books I'd pasted over, but that was only an excuse. They're just getting at us any way they can because of shopping in Vicksburg. Her voice cracked. What'll we do, David? We needed that job. Papa gently pushed the stray hair back over her ear. We'll get by. Plant more cotton, maybe. But we'll get by. There was quiet reassurance in his voice. Mama nodded and stood. Where are you going, child? Big Ma asked. Outside. I want to walk for a bit. Christopher John, Little Man, and I turned to follow her, but Papa called us back. Leave your mama be, he said. As we watched her slowly cross the backyard to the barren garden and head toward the south pasture, Mr. Morrison said,
You know, with you here, Mr. Logan, you got no need of me. Maybe there's work to be had round here. Maybe I could get something, help you out.
Papa stared across at Mr. Morrison. There's no call for you to do that, he said. I'm not paying you anything as it is. Mr. Morrison said softly, I got me a nice house to live in, the best cooking a man could want, and for the first time in a long time, I got me a family. That's right good pay, I'd say. Papa nodded. You're a good man, Mr. Morrison, and I thank you for the offer. But I'll be leaving in a few weeks, and I'd rather you was here. His eyes focused on Mama again, a tiny figure in the distance now.
Papa?
Rasped Christopher John, moving close to him.
Mama gonna be all right?
Papa turned, and putting his arms around Christopher John, drew him even nearer.
Son, your mama, she's born to teach and like the sun is born to shine. And it's gonna be hard on her not teaching anymore. It's gonna be real hard. 'Cause ever since she was a wee bitty girl down in the Delta, she wanted to be a teacher.
And Grandpa wanted her to be one too, didn't he, Papa?
Said Christopher John. Papa nodded.
Your mama was his baby child, and every penny he'd get his hands on, he'd put it aside for her schooling. And that wasn't easy for him either, 'cause he was a tenant farmer, and he didn't see much cash money. But he'd promised your grandmama before she died to see that your mama got an education. And when your mama come high school age, he sent her up to Jackson to school, then on to teacher training school. It was just 'cause he died her last year of schooling that she come on up here to teach instead of going back to the Delta.
And y'all got married, and she ain't gone back down there no more, interjected Little Man.
Papa smiled faintly at Little Man and stood up.
That's right, son. She was too smart and pretty to let get away.
He looked out the window again, then back at us. She's a strong, fine woman, your mama, and this thing won't keep her down, but it's hurt her bad. So I want y'all to be extra thoughtful for the next few days, and remember what I told you. You hear?
Yes, Papa, we answered.
Papa left us then and went on to the back porch. There he leaned against the porch pillar for several minutes, staring out toward the pasture. But after a while, he stepped into the yard and crossed the garden to join Mama.
TJ, you sure?
Stacy asked Little Willie Wiggins at recess the next day. Little Willie nodded morosely and answered,
Heard it myself. Clarence, too, was standing right upside him at the store when he told Mr. Caleb, come talking about how Miss Logan failed him on purpose, and then said she wasn't a good teacher, and that she the one stopped everybody from coming up to their store. Says she even was destroying school property, talking about them books, you know.
Who's gonna take him? I cried.
Hush, Cassie, said Stacy. How come you just telling this now, Little Willie?
Little Willie shrugged.
Guess I got fooled by old TJ. Clarence and me, we told him we was going to tell it soon as we left the store, but TJ asked us not to do it. Said he was going right back and tell them it wasn't nothing but a joke, what he said. And he went back, too. And I thought nothing was going to come of it.
He hesitated, then confessed.
Didn't say nothing about it before, 'cause me and Clarence wasn't supposed to be up there ourselves. But then here come Mr. Granger yesterday and fires Miss Logan. I figure that's TJ's doing.
He probably figured it, too, I said.
That's why he ain't in school today. Talk about he's sick, said Christopher John. If he ain't now, he's gonna be, prophesied little man, his tiny fists balled for action. Round here telling on Mama.
After school, when Claude turned up the forest trail leading to the Avery house, we went with him. As we emerged from the forest into the Avery yard, the house appeared deserted, but then we spied TJ, lazily swinging straddle-legged atop an inner tube hanging from an old oak in the front yard. Stacy immediately charged toward him, and when TJ saw him coming, he tried to swing his long right leg over the tube to escape. He didn't make it. Stacy jumped up on the inner tube, giving them both a jerky ride before they landed hard on Mrs. Avery's azalea bush.
"Man, what's the matter with you?" TJ cried as he rolled from under Stacy to glance back at the flattened bush. "My mama gonna kill me when she sees that bush."
Stacy jumped up and jerked at TJ's collar.
"Was you the one? Did you do it?"
TJ looked completely bewildered.
"Do what? What you talking about? Did you tell it? You tell them Wallaces about mama?" "Me?" asked TJ. "Me? Why, man, you ought to know me better than that."
"He do know you," I said. "How come you think we up here?"
"Hey, now, wait a minute," objected TJ. "I don't know what somebody been telling y'all, but I ain't told them Wallaces nothing." "You was down there," Stacy accused. "The day Mama caught you cheating, you went down to them Wallaces." "Well, that don't mean nothing," said TJ, jerking away from Stacy's grip and hopping to his feet. "My daddy says I can go down there if I wanna. Don't mean I told them old folks nothing, though."
"Heard you told them all sorts of things. Like Mama didn't know nothing. And she wasn't even teaching what she's supposed to."
"Didn't neither," denied TJ. "Ain't never said that. All I said was that it was her that—"
His voice trailed off as he realized he had said too much, and he began to laugh uneasily.
"Hey, look, y'all, I don't know how come Ms. Logan got fired, but I ain't said nothing to make nobody fire her. All I said was that she failed me again. A fella got a right to be mad about something like that, ain't he?"
Stacy's eyes narrowed upon TJ.
"Maybe," he said. "But he ain't got no right to go running his mouth off about things that ain't supposed to be told."
TJ stepped backward and looked nervously over his shoulder to the south, where the fields lay fallow. The rutted wagon trail which cut through the fields leading from the distant Granger mansion revealed a thin woman stepping briskly toward us. TJ seemed to take heart from the figure and grew cocky again.
"Don't know who's been telling, but it ain't been me."
A moment's silence passed, and then Stacy, his eyes cold and condemning, said quietly,
"It was you, all right, TJ. It was you."
Then, turning, he motioned us back toward the forest.
"Ain't you gonna beat him up?" cried a disappointed little man.
"What he got coming to him is worse than a beating," replied Stacy.
"What could be worse than that?" asked Christopher John.
"You'll see," said Stacy. "And so will TJ." TJ's first day back at school after almost a week's absence was less than successful. Avoiding us in the morning, he arrived late, only to be shunned by the other students. At first, he pretended that the students' attitude didn't matter, but by the afternoon when school was out, he hurried after us, attempting to convince us that he was merely a victim of circumstances.
"Hey, y'all ain't gonna hold what Little Willie said against me, are you?" he asked.
"You still saying what Little Willie said ain't true?" questioned Stacy.
"Why, shoot, yeah," he exclaimed. "When I catch up with that little rascal, I'm gonna beat him to a pulp round here telling everybody I got Ms. Logan fired. Ain't nobody even speaking to me no more. Little Willie probably told them Wallaces that himself, so he figures to get out of it by telling everybody it was..."
"Oh, stop lying, T.J.," I said testily. "Don't nobody believe you."
"Well, I should have known you wouldn't, Cassie. You never liked me no way."
"Well, anyway, that's the truth," I agreed.
"But," said T.J., grinning again and turning toward Little Man and Christopher John, "my little buddy Christopher John believes me, don't you, fella? And you still my pal, ain't you, Little Man?"
An indignant Little Man looked up at T.J., but before he could speak, easygoing Christopher John said, "You told on Mama, T.J. Now she all unhappy 'cause she can't teach school no more, and it's all your fault, and we don't like you no more."
"Yeah," added Little Man in agreement.
T.J. stared down at Christopher John, not believing that he had said that. Then he laughed uneasily.
"I don't know what's got into folks. Everybody's gone crazy."
"Look," Stacy said, stopping. "First, you run off at the mouth with them Wallaces, and now you blaming Little Willie for what you done. Why don't you just admit it was you?"
"Hey, man,"
T.J. exclaimed, grinning his easy grin. But then, finding that the grin and the smooth words no longer worked, his face dropped.
"Oh, all right. All right. So maybe what if I did say something about Miss Logan? I can't even remember saying nothing about it. But if both Little Willie and Clarence said I did, then maybe I did. Anyways, I'm real sorry about your mama losing her job." And
all of us, including Claude, stared distastefully at T.J. and walked away from him.
"Hey, wait! I said I was sorry, didn't I?" he asked, following us. "Look, what's a fella gotta do anyway? Hey, y'all, look, this here is still old T.J. I ain't changed. Y'all can't turn on me just 'cause..."
"You the one turned, T.J.," Stacy called over his shoulder. "Now leave us alone. We don't want no more to do with you." T.J., for the first time comprehending that we were no longer his friends, stopped. Then, standing alone in the middle of the road, he screamed after us,
"Who needs y'all anyway? I've been tired of y'all always hanging round for a long while now, but I've been too nice to tell you. I should have known better. What I look like, having a bunch of little kids round all the time and me here 14, near grown?"
We walked on, not stopping.
"I got me better friends than y'all. They give me things and treat me like I'm a man, and they white, too."
His voice faded into the wind as we left him, and we heard no more. Chapter 9. Spring. It seeped unseen into the waiting red earth in early March, softening the hard ground for the coming plow, and awakening life that had lain gently sleeping through the cold winter. But by the end of March, it was evident everywhere. In the barn, where three new calves bellowed, and chicks the color of soft pale sunlight chirped. In the yard, where the wisteria and the English dogwood bushes readied themselves for their annual Easter bloom. And the fig tree budded, producing the forerunners of juicy brown fruit for which the boys and I would have to do battle with the fig-loving Jack. And in the smell of the earth itself, rain-drenched, fresh, vital, full of life, spring enveloped all of us. I was eager to be in the fields again, to feel the furrowed rows of damp, soft earth beneath my feet, eager to walk barefooted through the cool forest, hug the trees, and sit under their protective shadow. But although every living thing knew it was spring, Miss Crocker and the other teachers evidently didn't, for school lingered on indefinitely. In the last week of March, when Papa and Mr. Morrison began to plow the East Field, I volunteered to sacrifice school and help them. My offer was refused, and I trudged wearily to school for another week.
"I guess I won't be seeing much of y'all after next Friday," said Jeremy one evening as we neared his forest trail.
Guess not, said Stacy. Be nice if our schools ended at the same time.
You crazy?
I cried, remembering that Jefferson Davis didn't dismiss until mid-May. Jeremy stammered an apology. I just mean we could still see each other. He was silent a moment, then brightened.
Maybe I can come over and see y'all sometime.
Stacy shook his head. Don't think Papa would like that.
Well, I just thought,
he shrugged,
it'll sure be lonely without y'all.
Lonely? I asked.
With all them brothers and sisters you got?
Jeremy frowned.
The little ones, they're too young to play with, and the older ones, Lillian Jean and R.W. and Melvin, I guess I don't like them very much.
What you saying? Asked Stacy. You can't not like your own sisters and brothers.
Well, I can understand that, I said soberly. I sure don't like them.
But they're his kin. A fella's gotta like his own kin. Jeremy thought about that.
Well, Lillian Jean's all right, I guess. She ain't so persnickety since Cassie stopped being her friend.
He smiled a secret smile to himself.
But that R.W. and Melvin, they ain't very nice. You ought to see how they treat T.J.
He halted, looked up embarrassed, and was quiet. Stacy stopped.
How they treat him?
Jeremy stopped, too.
I don't know, he said as if he was sorry he had mentioned it. They just don't do him right.
How? Asked Stacy.
Thought you didn't like him no more.
Well, I don't, replied Stacy defensively. But I heard he was running round with R.W. and Melvin, and I wondered why. Them brothers of yours must be 18 or 19.
Jeremy looked up at the sun, squinted, then glanced up his forest trail a few feet ahead. They brung T.J. by the house a couple of times when Pa wasn't home. They treated him almost friendly-like, but when he left, they laughed and talked about him, called him names.
He squinted again at the trail and said hurriedly,
I better go. See y'all tomorrow.
Mama, how come you suppose R.W. and Melvin putting in time with T.J.?
I asked as I measured out 2 heaping tablespoons of flour for the cornbread. Mama frowned down into the flour barrel.
Only 1 tablespoon, Cassie. And not so heaping.
But, Mama, we always use 2.
That barrel will have to last us until Papa goes back to the railroad. Now, put it back.
As I returned 1 tablespoon of flour to the barrel, I again asked,
What you think, Mama? How come them Sims is running round with T.J.?
Mama measured out the baking powder and gave it to me. It was a teaspoon less than we had been using, but I didn't ask her about it. It was running low, too.
I don't really know, Cassie, she said, turning to the stove to stir milk into the butter beans. They may just want him around because it makes them feel good.
When TJ's around me, he don't make me feel good.
Well, you told me Jeremy said they were laughing at TJ behind his back. Some folks just like to keep other folks around to laugh at them, use them.
I wonder how come T.J. don't know they laughing at him. You suppose he's that dumb?
T.J.'s not dumb, Cassie. He just wants attention, but he's going after it the wrong way.
I was going to ask what use T.J. could possibly be to anyone, but I was interrupted by Little Man running into the kitchen.
Mama, he cried, Mr. Jameson just drove up.
He had been in the barn cleaning the chicken coop with Christopher John, and stubby particles of straw still clung to his head. I grinned at his mussed appearance, but didn't have time to tease him before he was gone again. Mama looked at Big Ma, a question in her eyes, then followed Little Man outside. I decided that the cornbread could wait and dashed after them.
Girl, get back in here and finish mixing this cornbread, ordered Big Ma.
Yes'm, I said.
I'll be right back. Before Big Ma could reach me, I was out the back door running across the yard to the drive.
Mr. Jameson touched his hat as Mama approached.
How you doing, Miss Logan? He asked.
Just fine, Mr. Jameson, Mama answered. And yourself?
Fine, fine, he said absently.
Is David here?
He's over in the east field. Mama studied Mr. Jameson.
Anything wrong?
Oh, no. No, just wanted to speak to him.
Little man, Mama said, turning, go get Papa.
Oh, no, don't do that. I'll just walk on over there, if that's all right. I need the exercise.
Mama nodded, and after he had spoken to me, Mr. Jameson crossed the yard to the field. Little man and I started to follow after him, but Mama called us back and returned us to our jobs. Mr. Jameson didn't stay long. A few minutes later, he emerged from the field alone, got into his car, and left. When supper was ready, I eagerly grabbed the iron bell before Christopher John or Little Man could claim it, and I ran onto the back porch to summon Papa, Mr. Morrison, and Stacy from the fields. As the three of them washed up on the back porch, Mama went to the end of the porch where Papa stood alone. "What did Mr. Jameson want?" she asked, her voice barely audible. Papa took the towel Mama handed him, but didn't reply immediately. I was just inside the kitchen, dipping out the butter beans. I moved closer to the window so that I could hear his answer. "Don't keep anything from me, David. If there's trouble, I want to know." Papa looked down at her. "Nothing to worry about, honey. Just seems that Thurston Wallace been in town talking about how he's not going to let a few smart colored folks ruin his business. Says he's going to put a stop to this shopping in Vicksburg. That's all." Mama sighed and stared out across the plowed field to the sloping pasture land. "I'm feeling scared, David," she said. Papa put down the towel. "Not yet, Mary. It's not time to be scared yet. They're just talking." Mama turned and faced him. "And when they stop talking, then maybe it'll be time. But right now, pretty lady," he said, leading her by the hand toward the kitchen door, "right now, I've got better things to think about." Quickly, I poured the rest of the butter beans into the bowl and hurried across the kitchen to the table. As Mama and Papa entered, I slid onto the bench beside Little Man and Christopher John. Papa beamed down at the table.
"Well, look a here," he exclaimed. "Good old butter beans and cornbread. You better come on, Mr. Morrison. You too, son," he called. "These women folks done gone and fixed us a feast."
After school was out, spring drooped quickly toward summer. Yet Papa hadn't left for the railroad. He seemed to be waiting for something, and I secretly hoped that whatever that something was, it would never come, so that he would not leave. But one evening, as he, Mama, Big Ma, Mr. Morrison, and Stacy sat on the front porch while Christopher John, Little Man, and I dashed around the yard chasing fireflies, I overheard him say, "Sunday, I'm gonna have to go. Don't want to, though. I got this gut feeling it ain't over yet. It's too easy." I released the firefly imprisoned in my hand and sat beside Papa and Stacy on the steps.
"Papa, please," I said, leaning against his leg, "don't go this year."
Stacy looked out into the falling night, his face resigned, and said nothing. Papa put out his large hand and caressed my face.
"Got to, Cassie girl," he said softly. "Baby, there's bills to pay and ain't no money coming in. Your mama's got no job come fall, and there's a mortgage and next year's taxes to think of."
"But, Papa, we planted more cotton this year. Won't that pay the taxes?"
Papa shook his head.
"With Mr. Morrison here, we was able to plant more, but that cotton is for living on, and the railroad money is for the taxes and the mortgage."
I looked back at Mama, wanting her to speak, to persuade him to stay, but when I saw her face, I knew that she would not. She had known he would leave, just as we all had known.
"Papa, just another week or two, couldn't you?"
"I can't, baby. May have lost my job already."
"But, Papa..."
"Cassie, that's enough now," Mama said from the deepening shadows. I grew quiet, and Papa put his arms around Stacy and me, his hands falling casually over our shoulders. From the edge of the lawn, where Little Man and Christopher John had ventured after lightning bugs, Little Man called,
"Somebody's coming!"
A few minutes later, Mr. Avery and Mr. Lanier emerged from the dusk and walked up the sloping lawn. Mama sent Stacy and me to get more chairs for the porch. Then we settled back beside Papa, still sitting on the steps, his back propped against a pillar facing the visitors.
"You going up to the store tomorrow, David?"
Mr. Avery asked, after all the amenities had been said. Since the first trip in January, Mr. Morrison had made one other trip to Vicksburg, but Papa had not gone with him. Papa motioned to Mr. Morrison. "Mr. Morrison and me going the day after tomorrow. Your wife brought down that list of things you need yesterday." Mr. Avery cleared his voice nervously.
It's that list I come about, David. I don't want them things no more."
The porch grew silent. When no one said anything, Mr. Avery glanced at Mr. Lanier, and Mr. Lanier shook his head and continued,
"Mr. Granger making it hard on us, David. Said we're going to have to give him 60% of the cotton instead of 50, now that the cotton's planted and it's too late to plant more. Don't suppose, though, that it makes much difference. The way cotton sells these days, seems the more we plant, the less money we gets anyways."
Mr. Avery's coughing interrupted him, and he waited patiently until the coughing had stopped before he went on.
"I'm going to be hard put to pay that debt in Vicksburg, David, but I'm going to. I want you to know that."
Papa nodded, looking toward the road. "I suppose Montier and Harrison raised their percentages too," he said.
"Montier did," replied Mr. Avery. "But far as I know, Mr. Harrison ain't. He's a decent man."
"That does it," Mama sighed wearily. Papa kept looking out into the darkness.
40%. I expect a man used to living on 50 could live on 40, if he wanted to hard enough."
Mr. Avery shook his head.
"Times too hard." "Times are hard for everybody," Papa said. "I know. I feel real bad about what T.J. done."
"I wasn't talking about that," said Papa flatly.
Mr. Avery nodded self-consciously, then leaned forward in his chair and looked out into the forest.
But that ain't all Mr. Granger said. Said, too, we don't give up this shopping in Vicksburg. We can just get off his land. Says he's tired of us stirring up trouble against decent white folks. Then them Wallaces, they come by my place. Brother Lanier's and everybody's on this thing that owes them money. Said we can't pay our debts. They're gonna have the sheriff out to get us. Put us on the chain gang to work it off."
"Oh, good Lord," exclaimed Big Ma.
Mr. Lanier nodded and added,
"Gotta go up to that store by tomorrow to show good faith."
Mr. Avery's coughing started again, and for a while there was only the coughing and the silence. But when the coughing ceased, Mr. Lanier said,
"I pray to God there was a way we could stay in this thing, but we can't go on no chain gang, David."
Papa nodded. "Don't expect you to, Silas."
Mr. Avery laughed softly.
"We sure had him going for a time, though, didn't we?"
"Yes," agreed Papa quietly. "We sure did."
When the men had left, Stacy snapped,
"They got no right pulling out. Just 'cause them Wallaces threatened them one time, they go jumping all over themselves to get out like a bunch of scared jackrabbits."
Papa stood suddenly and grabbed Stacy upward.
"You, boy, don't you get so grown you go to talking about more than you know.
Them men, they doing what they gotta do. You got any idea what a risk they took just to go shopping in Vicksburg in the first place? They go on that chain gang, and their family's got nothing. They'll get kicked off that plot of land they tend, and there'll be no place for them to go. You understand that?"
Yes, sir, said Stacy.
Papa released him and stared moodily into the night.
"You were born blessed, boy, with land of your own. If you hadn't been, you'd cry out for it while you try to survive, like Mr. Lanier and Mr. Avery, maybe even do what they're doing now. It's hard on a man to give up, but sometimes it seems there just ain't nothing else he can do."
I'm sorry, Papa," Stacy muttered.
After a moment, Papa reached out and draped his arm over Stacy's shoulder.
"Papa,
I said, standing to join them. "We giving up, too?" Papa looked down at me and brought me closer, then waved his hand toward the drive. "You see that fig tree over yonder, Cassie? Them other trees all around? That oak and walnut, they're a lot bigger, and they take up more room and give so much shade they almost overshadow that little old fig. But that fig tree's got roots that run deep, and it belongs in that yard as much as that oak and walnut. It keeps on blooming, bearing good fruit year after year, knowing all the time it'll never get as big as them other trees. Just keeps on growing and doing what it gotta do. It don't give up. It give up, it'll die. There's a lesson to be learned from that little tree, Cassie girl, 'cause we're like it. We keep doing what we gotta, and we don't give up. We can't." After Mr. Morrison had retired to his own house, and Big Ma, the boys, and I had gone to bed, Papa and Mama remained on the porch, talking in hushed whispers. It was comforting listening to them, Mama's voice a warm, lilting murmur, Papa's a quiet, easy-flowing hum. After a few minutes, they left the porch, and their voices grew faint. I climbed from the bed, careful not to awaken Big Ma, and went to the window. They were walking slowly across the moon-soaked grass, their arms around each other. "First thing tomorrow, I'm going to go round and see how many folks are still in this thing," Papa said, stopping under the tree.
"I want to know before we make that trip to Vicksburg."
Mama was quiet a moment. "I don't think you and Mr. Morrison should go to Vicksburg right now, David. Not with the Wallaces threatening people like they are. Wait a while." Papa reached into the tree and broke off a twig. "We can't just stop taking care of business 'cause of them Wallaces, Mary. You know that." Mama didn't reply. Papa leaned against the tree.
"I think I'll take Stacy with me."
"Now, David, no.
He'll be 13 next month, honey, and he needs to be with me more. I can't take him with me on the railroad, but I can take him with me where I go round here, and I want him to know business, how to take care of it, how to take care of things when I ain't round."
"David, he's just a boy."
"Baby, a boy get as big as Stacy down here, and he's near a man. He gotta know a man's things. He gotta know how to handle himself."
"I know, but..."
"Mary, I want him strong, not a fool like TJ."
"He's got more brains and learning than that," Mama snapped.
"I know," Papa said quietly. "Still, it worries me seeing TJ turning like he is."
"Seems to me it isn't bothering Joe Avery much. He doesn't seem to be doing anything about it."
Papa allowed the silence to seep between them before he said,
"It's not like you, honey, to be bitter." "I'm not bitter," said Mama, folding her arms across her chest. "It's just that the boy's gotten out of hand and doesn't seem like anybody's doing anything about it."
"The other day, Joe told me he couldn't do nothing with TJ anymore. That's a hard thing for a man to admit."
"He can still put a good strip of leather against his bottom, can't he?"
It was clear that Mama was unsympathetic to Mr. Avery's problem. "Said he tried, but his health's so poor he ended up with a bad coughing spell. Got so sick from it he had to go to bed. Said after that Fanny tried to whip the boy, but TJ's stronger than her, and it didn't do no good."
Papa paused, then added,
"He's gotten pretty sassy too, I understand."
"Well, sassy or not," Mama grumbled, "they'd better figure out some way of getting that boy back on the right track, because he's headed for a whole lot of trouble."
Papa sighed heavily and left the tree. "We'd better go in. I've got to get an early start if I'm going to get round to everybody."
"You're still set on going to Vicksburg?"
"I told you I was." Mama laughed lightly in exasperation.
"Sometimes, David Logan, I wonder why I didn't marry sweet, quiet Ronald Carter or nice, mild Harold Davis."
"Because, woman," Papa said, putting his arm around her, "you took one look at big, handsome me and no one else would do."
Then they both laughed and together moved slowly to the side of the house. 7 families, including ours, still refused to shop at the Wallace store even with the threat of the Chang Gang. Mama said that the number was not significant enough to hurt the Wallaces
only enough to rile them, and she worried, afraid for Papa, Stacy, and Mr. Morrison to make the trip. But nothing she could say could change Papa's mind, and they left as planned on Wednesday morning long before dawn. On Thursday, when they were to return, it began to rain, a hard, swelling summer rain which brought a premature green darkness to the land and forced us to leave our hoeing of the cotton field and return to the house. As the thunder rumbled overhead, Mama peered out the window at the dark road. "Wonder what's keeping them," she said, more to herself than anyone else. "Probably got held up somewhere," said Big Ma. "Could have stopped to get out of this storm." Mama turned from the window. "You're most likely right," she agreed, picking up a pair of Christopher John's pants to mend. As the evening fell into total darkness, we grew silent. The boys and I saying very little, Mama and Big Ma concentrating on their sewing, their brows furrowed. My throat grew tight, and without knowing why I was afraid, I was. "Mama," I said, "they all right, ain't they?" Mama stared down at me. "Course they all right. They're just late, that's all." "But, Mama, you suppose maybe somebody done?" "I think you children better go on to bed," Mama said sharply, without letting me finish.
"But I want to wait up for Papa," objected little man.
"Me too," said sleepy Christopher John.
"You'll see him in the morning. Now, get to bed." Since there was nothing we could do but obey, we went to bed. But I couldn't sleep. A cold fear crept up my body, churning my stomach and tightening its grip on my throat. Finally, when I felt that I was going to be sick from it, I rose and padded silently into Mama and Papa's room. Mama was standing with her back to me, her arms folded, and Big Ma was still patching. Neither one of them heard the door swing open. I started to speak, but Mama was talking, and I decided not to interrupt her.
"I've got a good mind to saddle Lady and go looking for them," she said.
"Now, Mary, what good would that do?" Big Ma questioned. "You running round out there on that mare by yourself in this darkness and rain."
"But something's happened to them. I can feel it."
"It's just in your mind, child," Big Ma scoffed unconvincingly. "Them men folks all right?"
"No, no," said Mama, shaking her head. "The Wallaces are just in my mind. They—"
She stopped suddenly and stood very still. "Mary?
Thought I heard something."
The dogs started barking, and she turned, half running across the room. Pushing up the lock in a mad haste, she swung the door open and cried into the storm, "David! David!" Unable to stay put, I dashed across the room.
"Cassie, what you doing up, girl?" asked Big Ma, swatting me as I passed her.
But Mama, staring into the wet night, said nothing when I reached her side.
"Is it them?"
I asked. Out of the darkness, a round light appeared, moving slowly across the drive, and Mr. Morrison's voice drifted softly to us.
"Go on, Stacy," he said. "I got him."
Then Stacy, a flashlight in his hand, came into sight, followed by Mr. Morrison carrying Papa.
"David,"
Mama gasped, her voice a frightened whisper. Big Ma, standing behind me, stepped back, pulling me with her. She stripped the bed to its sheets and ordered,
"Put him right here, Mr. Morrison."
As Mr. Morrison climbed the steps, we could see that Papa's left leg stuck straight out, immobilized by his shotgun strapped to it with a rope. His head was wrapped in a rag through which the dark redness of his blood had seeped. Mr. Morrison eased Papa through the doorway, careful not to hit the strapped leg, and laid him gently on the bed. Mama went immediately to the bed and took Papa's hand.
"Hey, baby," Papa said faintly. "I'm all right. Just got my leg broke, that's all."
"Wagon rolled over it," said Mr. Morrison, avoiding Mama's eyes. "We better get that leg set. Didn't have time on the road."
"But his head," Mama said, her eyes questioning Mr. Morrison. But Mr. Morrison said nothing further, and Mama turned to Stacy. "You all right, son?"
"Yes," Stacy said, his face strangely ashen, his eyes on Papa.
"Then get out of those wet things,"
Don't want you catching pneumonia. Cassie, you go to bed.
I'll get a fire started, said Big Ma, disappearing into the kitchen as Mama turned to the closet to find sheets for making a cast. But Stacy and I remained rooted, watching Papa, and didn't move until Christopher John and Little Man made a sleepy entrance.
What's going on? Asked Little Man, frowning into the light.
Go back to bed, children, Mama said, rushing to keep them from coming further into the room. But before she could reach them, Christopher John spied Papa on the bed and shot past her.
Papa, you got back.
Mr. Morrison swung him up before he could jar the bed.
Well, what's the matter?
Asked Christopher John, wide awake now.
Papa, what's the matter? How come you got that thing on your head?
Your papa's asleep, said Mama, as Mr. Morrison set Christopher John back down. Stacy, take them back to bed and get out of those clothes. None of us stirred.
Move when I tell you, Mama hissed impatiently.